It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. My name is Joey. That is Len. Thursday night, like usual. What do you think? I was talking to my wife earlier, and so last week I went to a stag on Friday night, stag and doe. My wife and I and a few friends of ours, guy on our football team, is getting married, just turned 30. God bless him. I know you don't drink, but I'm going to tell you this anyway to see what you think. I had two beers between 4 and 6 p.m. on Friday. Another two Coors Banquets, tall boys, between 7:15-ish and 10 o'clock. The next day, Len, I couldn't get out of bed.
Did you eat?
Yeah, two porchetta sandwiches at the stag. Had a nice couple of porchetta sandwiches. Yeah, oh yeah.
No, snacks. It was a legit question because if you're drinking on your totally empty stomach.
Exactly. You got to be able to eat, right? And so yeah. I said to my wife, I just don't believe that my tolerance for even light beers has gone basically to zero over the last year.
Well, if you don't take any in,
I couldn't believe it. So you know what I said on Twitter that there's something going on here. Because someone tweeted the next day, just like randomly, and it showed up on my feed, of course, that the reason that kids are consuming less alcohol than people my age did and do probably, is that the hangovers are really bad. And I think there may be something to that, you know? And someone pointed out to me, a friend of ours actually, Tuan, pointed out to me that anything that's produced for export is just full of stuff that's going to make you more hungover. And I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, like the last year, I don't know. I realize you don't age in a straight line, and it's possible that, you know, I've aged quite a bit in that regard, let's say over the last year, but I was like completely shell-shocked. And a few other people said the same thing. The next morning, obviously the stag was for our football team. We all left at 10 o'clock and, you know, I was in bed by 11. I assume everyone else was too. Next morning, on a team of 16 guys, only 7 showed up.
Now, do younger people smoke more marijuana now than yesteryear?
Do they? I honestly don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that.
I'm not sure.
Because if they do, then I would say that whole hungover argument or that theory I might be thrown out the window, because you do kind of get that hungover feeling
after you smoke a joint.
It depends how often you do it.
Okay.
Right. It's just like anything. You build a tolerance. You take, like, I don't know if you ever have any aches or pains, like a headache or something. For me, I just take I could take ibuprofen, and that's one pill is enough for me to not really. But I don't take it frequently enough.
Yeah.
And so it's just like anything. So if they're smoking more.
You're right. Side note, we haven't had ibuprofen in the house in a long time. And I went to get some a few weeks ago because I was feeling a little sore after football. And we had to go out in that afternoon. My lower back was on fire. Do you know how much a thing of Motrin costs at the store now?
You have to be generic. I'm going to guess $15.
It's like $19. Yeah. That seems like a lot. I don't remember what they cost years ago, but that seemed like a lot to me. $20 for like a standard painkiller.
A pound of cherries was $8. A pound of cherries. It's cherry season right now.
Yeah. You know. Yeah.
But come on. Yeah. Everything's expensive.
Insane.
But,
insane.
You know, it's okay. We're going to get some money back from Mr. Carney. So what it equates to is enough to feed yourself for maybe a couple of days. That's it. But hey, it's all good.
I'm going to change my tag right now, actually, to reflect those realities. Okay, so last week's quote, as usual, the universe is filled with magical things patiently waiting for our wits to grow sharper. That was from Eden Philpotts, but nobody got it. This week's quote, in Mexico, an air conditioner is called a politician because it makes a lot of noise but doesn't work very well. If you know who that was by, put it in the comments. Don't forget that you're only allowed to look in the advertising section of your weekly parish bulletin for the answers and can't look on Google or anywhere else where you might actually find it. So you can only read things that you're at no risk of actually finding the answer when you're looking. And if you find it, you get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Put it in the comments, the usual stuff. You guys know the rules. Where do you want to start? We got five stories plus a late ad because EasyDNS founder, proprietor, Mark Jeftovic, decided to come out of the basement for a podcast appearance. He probably actually didn't come out of the basement. He probably did it in the basement, but it at least gave the appearance that he's willing to leave the basement to do a podcast appearance.
He gets out and about. Don't give him that.
I don't know. Everyone I talk to, is he between you and him? It seems like everyone's always in the same room when I talk to him. Actually, that's not true. Mark has come to visit.
Yeah, he's been around. Like, don't put him in a different category as
sorry,
me.
Mark.
I'm still waiting to leave. Yeah, this Senate bill. Let's talk about this U.S. Senate bill that's being thrown around and has been proposed. And the name for the first, it's called CSAM, CSAM Act of 2025. What does CSAM stand for? Combating Child Sexual Abuse Material. They
just stop it right there. I mean, just stop it right there. Listener, viewer, right now, you're probably going, let me guess what this is about. It's about decrypting any chat or traffic that right now is encrypted end to end, and they're trying to do it under the guise of protecting children. If you guessed that, Len, what's the prize? What do the winners get if that was their guess?
3% inflation. That's the official number. In reality, it's 9%. So we are all winners as a result. And so I like how they try to put it under the guise of protecting kids. And then, so it's that end-to-end encryption type deal where they're trying to get around that and try to undermine how it is done. Now, the reality is this has no teeth whatsoever.
Yeah.
If you're using a proper end-to-end encryption method, there's no way they could ask the provider, because there is none, to get access to your messages. If you use some, like, for example, Signal, right, where it's a peer-to-peer messaging signal, messaging service, it's not like there's a centralized body that has all the messaging and it's going through them. It's not the case. So you have to somehow compromise the phone, or to a lesser extent, if they're not encrypting any data, maybe the ISP level. That's really the only way to do it. But even then, it's still encrypted. So this whole bill here that's being proposed, it's got no teeth with respect to going after end-to-end or undermining end-to-end encryption for messaging purposes, unless you use a terrible one. Like, didn't the Iranians tell their folks to not use WhatsApp and, gosh, was it Instagram?
Mm-hmm.
So why were they saying that? Well, isn't WhatsApp supposed to be end-to-end encryption? Because, well, it goes through a centralized server. If they want to get information about people's messages being sent over and or locations where they are at, they could do that. So, yeah, this CSAM stuff, it's totally toothless. It will do nothing if you do it right. So learn how to use the right messaging app. There are tons out there. Learn how to use it.
The big thing for me is that this is like a redux of a million stories we've done on this show. And it's, again, like it's just obviously a disaster for privacy, obviously a disaster for encryption, obviously a disaster for civil liberties and individual rights. Obviously. The thing that I think is underappreciated here is that, like, if you are a platform, email service, messaging service, whatever, and you can't give the backdoor access and something happens on your platform, you're liable for that content. That is an impossible standard to maintain and meet and in good faith actually try and you know, achieve some level of transparency while also keeping user data, user messaging, whatever, private. This is not something we often talk about when it comes to these types of legislative efforts, but this one I thought, okay, we gotta mention this, because the big thing that's always been the lifesaver in the past was, look, we can't do it. Apple can't see the iMessage stuff. It is true end-to-end encryption, and no matter what they do, short of putting a backdoor, which they're unwilling to participate in, they can't see the content. But Apple's never been told by the US government, well, then you're liable for anything that happens on iMessage that causes us any harm or anyone any harm. And by the way, we're changing the definition of harm every week, it seems like, okay? That's never happened, but it's happening with this. that's tricky now for providers. Are you willing to run up against the Leviathan under the auspices of, well, we can't decrypt the information, and so it's not our responsibility to look at what's in the messages, emails, whatever. Do you think that's a major change in the way that governments are approaching this? Hasn't been the case, as far as I can tell, any other story we've done like this, but this one has that additional clause there, which I think is pretty important.
I think this executive order that Trump signed recently, sustaining select efforts to strengthen the nation's cybersecurity and amending Executive Order 13694 and Executive Order 14144. So this was signed by President Donald J. Trump on June 6th, just a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago. And all this really does is makes it a little bit more challenging for people out there to have their information secure when you're dealing with the United States government. And the reason being, these two orders eliminates the enhanced software security attestation requirements for federal contractors. And this was previously mandated that they had to get machine readable attestations and centralized validation by Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. Mm-hmm. So what this means is that there could be a potential increase in privacy risks if the government systems are not addressed before deployment. And you could almost guarantee these systems are not addressed before deployment.
Given if they were, we wouldn't have all this content every week.
Exactly. So. With respect to this too, it's not like they're going to give you the credit monitoring service for you. They'll just give you, sorry about that, we'll try to do better next time. And what are you going to do, vote harder? So, all this is, like, I just don't want to know why this was done. Was there a heavy lobbying done? Like, what was the rationale to do this? Because it seems like it's a step in the wrong direction with respect to privacy, especially with dealing with the United States government and how they deploy their software. So they're taking away a little bit of that onus on them to do it right. And now it's just almost left in the wild. It could be done however they want it to do. Like, this is pretty bad if you ask me.
I have a hard time even formulating a comment about this because, like, what is the other side? Yeah, what is the other side of the coin? Like, what is the hidden meaning here? I guess it's like easier for businesses, maybe. But
there was a lobbying effort.
There must have been. But like, it's not. This doesn't wind up being actually like good for anybody. Even that you could even argue that the businesses that would benefit from this, like, there's even if they get grabbed in an attack or in a vulnerability, like, it's still going to look bad on them. I mean, maybe they don't care. That's also a possibility. But I'm reading this, I'm just thinking, like, why would you do this? Who's asking for this? Businesses have this level of security anyways. I mean, there's some stuff in here, like, you know, there's a quantum safe encryption for federal systems scrapped, adoption of phishing resistant login methods like WebAuth scrapped, SSDF compliance scrapped, which, by the way, was the result of a breach a little while ago. Guidance for securing border gateway protocol scrapped, and then promotion of digital identities also scrapped. So I don't know, like, why would you do it? I don't know. I honestly have no idea. I have a hard time, just as an aside, discerning why the administration does a lot of stuff these days. So
maybe they were advised to do it from some foreign country just before an attack was taking place. Just to ensure that there's leverage moving forward. Right? Who knows?
Did you watch the Tucker Ted Cruz interview, by the way?
No. What's the synopsis of that? Like, what happened?
It's unbelievable. It's about mostly like Israel and Israel's sort of place in American and, I think, more broadly Western foreign policy. And I don't want to get this channel demonetized, but, you know, the comment that Cruz makes sort of unprovoked to Carlson about when he became a U.S., I guess he's a senator, right? Yeah. When he became a U.S. senator, his main goal was to be Israel's greatest ally in the United States. Like, he said that unprovoked to Tucker Carlson in this information and sort of sentiment environment. That was the thing he decided would be a good idea to...
Making Canada proud.
Yeah, he's Canadian. He's a Canadian working for Israel in the United States. So, there you go. True Renaissance man.
Scattered Spider Joey. Oh my God.
Three. It's a three. It's a three.
Not even Scattered Spider. I mean, a one. It's so bad. It's a cybercrime group. They've been doing damage with social engineering tactics. And with that, they've been focusing on extorting data and doing data theft. And they've been targeting IT support teams. And they do so with the ability to speak English really well. So again, I mentioned there was social engineering tactics, and they have a knack for impersonating employees within companies, deceiving help desks, and bypassing multi-factor authentication to gain access to internal systems. And so, like, even if you trust an organization, right, even if it's an organization that you have high trust for, this type of attack pretty much nukes any trust you could have in it, because what this means is they could get direct access to what's in there. And well, they could steal stuff like financial details, personal identification, login credentials. Once they get inside a network, all that data they get, SaaS applications, cloud services, they could take that and they could do the double extortion tactic where the stolen data is not only encrypted, but it's also threatened to be leaked publicly if the ransom is not paid. So really, in the end here, people need to be very, very concerned, but also people have to have their guard up against social engineering tactics.
Always, right? Always.
Exactly. You know, if you get the call claiming that there's somebody in the front line, they need some assistance, get some more information. Verify that's the person that actually works for your organization. Get their name, date of birth, where they live, whatever it's going to be in there to identify who they are, before you start allowing them free access internally to the system. That's what it seems like to me, but whatever. It's Scattered Spider. Oh, they're doing a good job with it. They don't have this strong Indian accent. They have the Western accent going on, so they're able to do their things.
There's an interesting set of AI tools now that takes away the harshest Indian, Asian accents when you're using voice over IP. I suppose you could use it on like a cell phone too, or a regular phone if you had the tools. But I think that accent thing is going to become a tell of the past in the next little while. On the subject of this particular story, the social engineering thing to me continues to be baffling. The idea that you would take a call from someone you didn't know, receive an email from someone you don't know, follow instructions without verifying anything, and wind up, you know, giving up your SaaS data or whatever you lost, it's still like just completely, it's completely alien to me, the idea that this could happen to somebody. And you and I are not exactly like young internet users anymore. And I don't know a lot of people older than me who are using, you know, SaaS products who would fall for this, or like engineering SaaS products who would fall for this or whatever. But again, like, I got to tell you, I am astounded every week that we have a story like this. Social engineering, still.
Yeah, it's prevalent.
Yeah, but why? How? I don't understand. There's stories in the paper, stories on the news. Everyone has heard of someone getting scammed over the phone, scammed via email. Yeah. But still, it happens to them.
Yeah, the people they're just either not trained or they just don't care.
Maybe.
They could be overworked and underpaid, or just they don't have
That's the scammer, overworked.
And that's everybody. that's even the person working in IT allowing them access, right? They're doing their job, and it's like cookie cutter. It's okay, you call in your name, your email address. So what can I do for you? Oh, you need access to the system. Here you go. Forgot your password. Way you go. Because there's no loyalty to the company, and there's problems everywhere. So whatever. Zoom car, Joey. Zoom car.
It's an absolutely terrible name. Awful, terrible. One of the worst names I've ever heard for a company. We're not rating it, but if we were, it would not be pretty. I'll tell you that.
The car sharing platform, they had exposed personal information of approximately 8.4 million users discovered just recently, June 9th. And the stock price the past week down 45%.
Finally, some retribution for the shareholders here. Come on.
And today down about 18%, just a little bit less last I saw. Mm. So they've been taking a beating.
Well, and they probably weren't trading today, right? Because today's Juneteenth. So the markets are closed in the States today.
Then the last trading day was 18%. I didn't even realize that. My bad.
Or Wednesday. So,
So the compromised data includes personal information like names, full names, phone numbers, car registration, home addresses, email addresses. And Zoomcar states that the financial information and plain text passwords were not compromised. So that's a huge thumbs up there. But with all this information out there, people could make some convincing attacks. Social engineering, like when they try to get in touch with people, impersonating people, SMS attacks, which could lead to SIM swapping moving forward. Who the heck knows? They could even try to apply for financial, maybe credit card or opening bank accounts. There's a lot of things people could do. A lot of potential here. Plus, it could be sold on the dark web over here. So Zoomcar, they acknowledged the breach, and they claim that they've implemented additional safeguards to this. And it's not the first time they've been through this dance. And they had a similar breach back in 2018, 3.5 million users. And that information that was stolen back then was later surfaced on underground marketplaces. So they got a history of this. They don't do a good job at securing your data. And I'm waiting for them to offer 1 year of credit monitoring service and maybe a free ride on top of that. Maybe that will appease customers.
Okay, two banger bits of information from this. The breach was discovered when the staff at Zoomcar received messages about the breach from the hacker. Amazing. Okay. Second banger piece of data. It's unclear whether or not the people who actually use Zoomcar, who presumably were affected, have been individually notified. So if your data was accessed, they still haven't told you. Maybe. I assume if they haven't said that they've told you explicitly, then you probably have not been notified. How about that? I was going to give these guys some kudos when I first read the story, because it's a recent leak that's already in Access of Easy and already out there. But some boxes yet to be checked, Len. Some boxes yet to be checked.
Kind of short their stock.
It's so great. I love that. And you mentioned there the 2018 breach, like twice in 7 years. Pretty good. Not bad.
That's a great record.
Yeah, it's like Colorado Avalanche Stanley Cup cadence, right? Once or twice every 7 years, something like that.
Michael Geist wrote again about Bill.
Love Mike.
Bill C4, and that's making its way through the federal government. It looks like it's being expedited from what I could tell. And there, you know, the political parties, we talked about this, the privacy laws, that it takes away the ability for them to report, and they could potentially sell information. And it's a whole bunch of things. But then it also dates back for 20. This is retroactive for a couple of decades here. So, but what's not also noted, but Michael Geist did previously, like he did in this article, SMS messages, right? That gets really annoying.
Yeah, during, big time.
Especially election time, right? People send you messages, who are you voting for, and stuff like that. So recent reports from the CRTC indicate that political party SMS spam, as they call it, has become a major source of complaints. But Bill C-4 could potentially give political parties unlimited power to collect and use and disclose this personal information. And like I said last week, there'll be little to no accountability whatsoever. So there could be a lot more of this moving forward. You like getting spam messages through these elections or even in between elections? Well, there may be more coming, because this information could be potentially sold, because these political parties, it's a good way for them to recoup some of the costs. They need money to run elections, and this could be a new source of revenue for them moving forward. So I love this Bill C-4. It's the bill that just keeps on giving.
Yeah. A couple things I want to note. Michael Geist, mild-mannered, seems to me to be taking the gloves off and showing some teeth over the last 6 months. And why not? Whether it was the bills of the previous government, the initial attempts and, you know, early salvos from the sitting government, I think he's right. The privacy is something that's very clearly on the minds of our elected officials. Preserving it for them and eroding it for us seems to be the trend. I'll also note that this is an interesting story, if for no other reason than because, as you mentioned, SMS is sort of the key to all of this. But I mean, for me, Len, I don't. My phone screens SMS messages that are from numbers that look like spam. So it screens content, it screens whether it's a contact or not, it screens all sorts of stuff and does a pretty good job. 99.9% of the time when I get spam messages, they wind up in a spam box and I don't have to look at them, see them, they don't give me notification, nothing. So it begs the question, what's the next step for political parties who are trying to get in touch with you? You know, they won't be able to call you because I'll screen it. They won't be able to text me because I'll screen it. So what is the next step for them? I don't know.
They from the Senate bill in the United States, they'll be able to crack the encryption and then directly message you on Signal or whatever.
Is that the next, you know, like I have no idea. No. You know, short of you know, deploying a ground crew to my house and, you know, knocking on my door six times a week during an election campaign, I just don't see how they can contact me. And I think this is a problem that political parties, media, et cetera, are about to run up against in a major way over the next 10 or 12 years. The boomers will die out. You know, they're the only people really reading and digesting even messaging and stories from these, I would call them at this point, old mediums. So I don't know. Like, I understand the concern from Professor Geist, obviously, but part of me also says it's like a last gasp and another example of a political party, you know, or a government fighting the last war. Like, no one cares about SMS. I don't get SMS messages from spammers. So,
well, you don't, but if it's blocking it, like your phone is blocking it, but yeah, they're sending you your name through it. SMS is not secure, so then that name could be tied to your number.
Fair point.
That could be problematic, like SIM swap attacks potentially. Like, you don't know. Sure. It just opens up a can of worms. But let's go to the next story. And you know what? I'm going to pass it over to you because I'll be perfectly frank. I did not listen to the podcast between Hervé and Merch.
We got
to
edit that out.
I don't listen to a lot of podcasts these days, and I know that Mark was on there talking about CBDCs and social credit.
It's a great listen. Mark is, like, you know, I'm not just saying this because he sponsors CBP. Super sharp, and I said this on our show. I often come away from listening to Mark's appearances on other programs thinking I should be reading more and trying to, like, you know, keep up with his not his worldview, but the number of inputs that he's constantly, I think, surveying. And so, you know, I've admittedly had a hard time doing that over the last few years for reasons that are both valid and completely insane. You know, I have a young daughter now, and so I've been busy with that. And, you know, we have our own podcast to do. But, you know, on the other side, I also play too many video games and waste too much time on weekends. So I should do that. And I come away from Mark's appearances thinking that almost all the time. Hervé Morich has been on our show, Len. I don't know if you remember that, but I interviewed him on CBP maybe a year ago. And I've been on his TNT radio show, now defunct, two or three times, I think. So, yeah, this is a good show. There's a lot in here about globalism and CBDCs and ideas like the nation state versus the network state and, you know, monetary regime change and where stablecoins come in. And I think the big question that Mark tries to answer in the interview is, you know, what can you do to get out of what could be coming in terms of this algorithm ghetto, like Hervé says? And that's not Hervé's term, but someone else's term, but he uses it a lot. And it's very, very fitting. And, you know, the two guys are discussing a lot of stuff. And I think the other big question that needs to be answered that they address in the podcast, I won't spoil the answer that they give, but the other big question is, can the current system be held together long enough to deploy a new, more modern, more oppressive system to the people who are kind of stuck in it? And I'm not sure if it can or not, but I'll let you listen to that podcast to find out what they think. And I will say that Hervé, you know, Geopolitics and Empire is a favorite show of mine. I like it quite a bit. It is a little black pill, so, you know, brace yourself for that. But this episode with Mark is pretty good. It's pretty good, and there's a lot of hope being dished out for the hour that they're speaking. So, yeah, definitely go check it out if you haven't already.
And we should end it on very briefly on this story because it's still really, really fresh, and I don't have all the details, but 16 billion passwords with a B, billion. 16 billion passwords looks like they've been leaked. And these are passwords that are associated with Google accounts, Apple accounts, Facebook accounts, and social media accounts. It's highly advised for people out there to change your password, especially if you're using a password manager that somebody else is hosting that information. And Google is telling tens of billions of users to change your password. And the FBI is even recommending that.
This is not on the letter. Where is this?
this is, it's a bonus one, and I threw in. I was going to throw in even another bonus one on top of this, but I think this is the more pressing of the two. Okay. And this is all really recent information. By the time people hear this episode, maybe there'll be a little bit more. But if you haven't heard of it and you haven't acted, it may be advisable to start changing passwords, start enabling two-factor or multi-factor authentication, and try to protect yourself. Self-hosting your passwords is a wonderful way to do it. It's a pain in the butt. Let's be honest, it's a huge pain in the butt. But there is no way to expose that if you protect your passwords the right way to do it. So, yeah, I'm not sure if you heard about this new story, Joey, but it's been making its rounds on X today. So
I have not heard about it at all. So, yeah, 16 billion.
Yeah. Like, that's like, what, twice the world, give or take?
I mean, are we 8 or 9? Yeah, something like that. I mean, everyone's got how many passwords, you know?
I must have hundreds. I can't even, like, you know, of all the forums I signed up and all the different things I signed up, you know, like Discord or YouTube, and like, I must have hundreds, and I'm just like one person. Like, I'm sure everybody I have like tons, but man, oh man, this is a nutty story. But I wish I had more details about it. But all I can say is it's still very early on in the story lifespan. So hopefully by the time people start listening to this, our show, they'll be able to have a little bit more information and know how to act. But best way to do it right now is change your passwords and enable two-factor or multi-factor authentication.
And, you know, we will have more information next week for you, listener viewer, with more of the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And at that time, don't forget, sign up for the newsletter, podcast, YouTube channel, all that good stuff. Accessofeasy.com. You can read all about the stories we just covered, plus much more every week. Don't forget to come see us again next Friday on release day for more fun in cybersecurity. Until then, take care of yourself.
Take care.